What is your name, sir?
I am Bill Buttlicker.
Really, that's your real name?
How dare you? My family built this country, by the way.
Be respectful, Dwight, please.
Yes, Michael.
Could you hold on 1 second? That's my other line.
What? No, but I...
Hello? Yeah. No, I'm just on the phone with this stupid salesman. He's so dumb. Probably just gonna keep him on the line forever and not buy anything. Okay.
It's up to you to change his mind.
Sorry, that was a family emergency.
Oh no, what's wrong?
You know what? That's private.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Victory Monday. Oh man, this never gets old. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. And we are once again brought to you by the fine folks at Mojo. What if you could have invested in Daniel Bellinger a couple weeks ago, like I told you to, because he had a touchdown yesterday? Or Tiki Barber as a second round pick? Or Phil Sims, who admitted on draft day, most people have never heard of me? Or maybe even Daniel Jones at the beginning of this season. He's played particularly well, and we'll get into it. Now it's not a what if, but it's a who's next. Mojo is the all-new sports stock market that lets you invest in your favorite athletes and cash in on your passion. By the way, I hope people finally understand what I was talking about with the Indianapolis Colts after this week's Thursday night game. I mean, if my rant didn't hit home as you're sitting there on your couch at 11:45 with this game in overtime, I don't know what else. There's nothing else I can say. Sign up right now on the Apple App Store to get your first stock free worth up to $10,000. Over 300 NFL players are listed on Mojo, so you can invest in rookies like Breece Hall, who had a bangin' Sunday, rising stars like Elijah Moore, comeback candidates like Saquon Barkley, who also had a bangin' day, and superstars like Patrick Mahomes, who goes and plays tonight. Go long to make money when an underrated diamond in the rough breaks out, or short an overrated rival and make money as he flops. Prices move with every play, every game, and every headline, and you can buy and sell instantly anytime, all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download it on the Apple App Store today. Must be 21 and older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info.
Woo! How about that?
5-1.
Haven't seen that big of a smile on your face since we started doing this.
I'm so happy. I don't even know how many wins we have. Too many to keep track.
Yeah, I know, right? Just a monumental victory, man. I mean, you can't even, like, this isn't Tennessee. This isn't Chicago. The Giants shorthanded, you know.
I mean, they're shorthanded every week.
Yeah.
But this was just icing on the cake.
I mean, I was going to say, I mean, the roster's already, you know, under construction, to put it lightly. Missing some of the key players that they have. Going to London. Quarterback who's banged up, running back gets banged up, you know, your best offensive player, I should say, gets banged up. And what do the Giants do? They find a way to win a game against a team that people looked at as a Super Bowl contending team, a team that was going to be, you know, one of those elite teams in the league. And what did the Giants do? They beat them.
8-point dogs in London.
Yes. They kept Aaron Rodgers in the Packers offense, who I know hasn't been great, but it's still Aaron Rodgers. And they kept him scoreless in the second half. I believe he was 7-for-15 for, I think, 87 yards. He was sacked one time. Should have been sacked more. I have no problem discussing that.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, these Giants. And yesterday after the game, and I sat down with myself and I said, you know what? This team can make noise this year. The NFC is not what it used to be. The Buccaneers are going through their issues. We just beat the Packers. We hung with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you've seen the Dallas Cowboys – Yeah. Take care.
And we should have, and we're in that game.
Yes.
The Giants were very
we
in that game.
We had the ball late in the game to go down and win the football game. We'll see what happens with the Eagles. But if you're a Giant fan right now, regardless what your opinion was of this team coming into the year, right now this team is 4-1, and there's not a game on their schedule where you look at and you say, man, we got no shot. They're going. They're playing Baltimore this week. Ethan, you going in that game thinking the Giants have no shot to win that game?
They have an absolutely great shot.
Exactly. So this team is well coached. This team has emerging.
I want you to say it. I want you to say it. Say it. No team upgraded at head coach more than the New York Football Giants. Say it. Say it.
I'm not. I can't.
You saw the Jags' performance yesterday against Houston. That was abysmal.
I know. But listen, Urban Meyer didn't last a year
Joe
in
Judge,
Jacksonville.
Say it. Joe Judge to Dable. That is a bigger leap than Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson.
Only because it's a victory Monday. I probably wouldn't say this any other day of the week. But okay, I'll get.
There we go.
The Giants upgraded at quarterback more. I'll say this.
Head coach.
No, meet me in the middle. No team upgraded their coaching staff more than the New York Giants.
Fine.
Thank you. All right. And, you know, the coaching, we've talked about it every single week. But they have emerging talent, Ethan, at areas that we looked at before the season and said, that's a problem.
Yep.
Dexter Lawrence has taken his game to another level.
Yeah.
When I used to, you know, get mad at people because I felt like they were, you know, overrating Dexter Lawrence, it was because they were talking about him like he is the player today. There is a clear difference in Dexter Lawrence's game. Even without Leonard Williams, he is dominating the interior of the defensive line. He is dominating opposing offensive linemen. He has taken his game to a whole nother level.
What we can say about Dexter Lawrence, and I'm sure we can give a lot of credit to Wink on this, is that I think both of us always acknowledge that he was a good player.
Yes.
But at his position, like, to spend a first round pick on an interior defensive lineman who lacks pass rush ability, who most, including us, considered a two down lineman, to come into this year and really refine his pass rush.
He's a three down player.
I mean, if we are looking at the roster as a whole right now, I struggle to really find a player who improved more from last year to this year. And I say that because Andrew Thomas played really well down the stretch last year. So right. For him to be as dominant as he is maybe it's a surprise to other fan bases and other analysts around the league, but it's not as much of a surprise to us. Daniel Jones, he's definitely played better under this coaching staff. He's not playing at an elite level, but Dexter Lawrence to add that pass rush to his repertoire, I think makes him the most improved player through however many weeks we are into the season, and I don't think it's really a debate.
Right now, if I ask you to list, you know, the 10 best defensive players in the NFL right now this year, Dexter Lawrence is on that list.
Probably.
I mean, he's been that dominating of a player, and because his emergence is in him taking his game to another level, that has made the defensive line better. I mean, you talk about the tight end position. Daniel Bellinger is contributing in ways that Evan Engram could not and did not. Like that, you know, their running game and their offensive line has improved because, you know, obviously they've gotten better on the offensive line, but they have tight ends who can block. And when you have tight ends who can block and your game plan is we're going to run the football because our receivers are out or inconsistent, you need blocking tight ends. All that stuff, like, it's all coming together, culminating with the quarterback who I believe, what we've seen the last 3 weeks, if I were to ask you, give me Daniel Jones' best 5 games or weeks of his career.
All this season.
Three of them were this year, right? Three of them were this year. And to me, that shows, okay, Daniel has an element in his game that this coaching staff is unlocking, and he is showing that he's coachable and his talent is showing. We've talked about it, right? Like, there is talent there, but can it be unlocked? And it is sort of being unlocked. I think what Daniel Jones did yesterday, I would be a hypocrite to sit up here and tell you this is what I want in a, this is what I want in a franchise quarterback, and this is what I want in a franchise quarterback. And Daniel Jones showed that in the second half against the Packers. When Barkley went down, he had an 8-for-8 drive, led the team down the field. I think he accounted for 82 of the 87 or yards that that drive was. He put the team on his back. And I understand people want to have this conversation now, but I don't want to have that conversation right now. I'm living in the moment. What Daniel Jones did was impressive. What he's done the last 3 weeks has been impressive. He's pissed me off a lot over his four-year career. No doubt about that. There were times where I was ready to move on. I'm not even going to lie to you, Ethan. There were times in week one and week two where I said, let's just bench this dude. Like, I cannot watch this guy anymore. But the fact that he played on a bum ankle, the fact that he carried his team late in the game, had a bloody wrist, you want to root for somebody like that. I don't know what the future holds. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know, but Daniel Jones has a fan in me. I will root for Daniel Jones wherever he goes, and I really hope he continues to ascend rather than descend. And look, part of the reason why I think the Giants can hang with anybody is because their quarterback is taking this game to another level, and I hope there's another level that he can take it to.
Oh, there better be.
Yeah. They execute their game plan really, really well. They put their players in position to be successful. And if you're a Giant fan right now and you're looking at, you know, the landscape of the NFL and looking at all the teams and how inconsistent so many teams are, you would be a damn fool to think that your team can't hang with anybody in the NFC.
Yeah, I agree with the majority of what you just said. I think as podcasters, and it is our job to still have that conversation. We don't have to have the full conversation now, but what I will say is I agree with you. Daniel Jones had played. I mean, I think every single week this season we've been like, "That's his best game."
Yes,
that's his best game.
Except those first 2 weeks. After that,
that's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. It's like he's gotten better every week, and it's going to come with being more comfortable with this coaching staff, and this coaching staff being more comfortable with him. I think there's a lot of factors that go into his improvement at the quarterback position. And when it comes to him, I started off the season, I said there's a 99% chance the Giants are drafting a quarterback in this upcoming draft. Well, with the Giants sitting at 4-1, they have essentially already played themselves out of drafting a quarterback, especially with the fact that they've beaten the Packers, they've beaten the Titans, they've taken care of business against pretty much everyone that they should have taken care of business against, and then some. So, yeah, I'm expecting them to win more games. They're going to exceed their season win total. And, you know, I think it makes that conversation more difficult for the front office after this season. But, hey, like that, I mean, that's what Daniel Jones is supposed to do. Like, he's like, you know, as fans, like, yeah, we want him to make this decision easy. Like, we want him to either be really bad or we want him to be really, really, really good. Right. So that it's like, it's a no-brainer, right? Either this guy's here next year or he's not here next year. And right now, every single week, he's making that decision more difficult and making it a more ambiguous decision at the quarterback position.
Which is what he's supposed to do.
Exactly, which is what he's supposed to do. So no complaints from me after this game. I do want to talk about the other quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Wink Martindale just shitting his cereal in the second half. Aaron Rodgers failed to complete any of his 6 deep passes against the Giants, his most deep pass attempts without a completion in a game since Week 5, 2016. The Packers scored 0 points on offense. They were so bad that the Giants special teams were like, you know what, we'll gift you 2 points in the second half.
You weren't scared about that Hail Mary thing? I was a little bit, I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a little PTSD on both sides. Yes. But, we spoke about that with Aaron. But, you know, they took care of business. And as soon as they go up 10-0, I'm sitting there in the living room with my dad, and we're both just looking at each other like, all right, well, good. And we have the rest of our morning to just do whatever we got to do before the 1 o'clock games start. And every 5 minutes, it's just like, holy shit. What?
Yeah.
No way. They're not going to do this, are they?
When did you think that they're going to do this? To me, it's when they tied the game and then Aaron Rodgers went 3 and out. And I was like, the Giants are winning this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious answer.
I was like, they're going to win this game. And Barkley came back, and I was like, they have Green Bay on the ropes. Because Green Bay, despite the fact that they've been such a successful team, winning games, you know, in the Aaron Rodgers era, they've always shown mental weakness at times.
Yeah.
And they're a team that when you hit them in the mouth, they don't necessarily respond well. That's what Wink Martindale did. I mean, the second half, the Giants came out, and so when the game started, it was all about pressuring Aaron Rodgers, right? And then Rodgers figured out, okay, let me get the ball out quickly, right?
Yeah.
And they had success. They went up 20.
Which he's good at.
Yeah, of course, right? That's part of his repertoire. They go up 20-10 at halftime. And you see, coming out of the second half, the Giants adjusted. How did they adjust? And Kayvon Thibodeau, in his post-game interview, talked about this. Was like, we knew he was getting the ball out, so it was going to be difficult for the rushers to get there. So what do? Constantly have your hands up. Constantly be ready to bat the ball down. I mean, they had so many batted balls.
A lot of batted balls. Right. Thibodeau had one, and then McKinney had one.
Right. And they had a couple more that it didn't look like a batted ball because it was incomplete, but they had – like they the adjustments that they made in the second half were, I think, just the makings of a team that, you know, understands how to win games in the National Football League. And that's so important, and I keep harping on that. Like, when you're finding ways to win, and you're regardless the opponent, regardless of your personnel, like that is a special, special trait. And that should give every Giant fan hope.
Yeah. Kayvon Thibodeau. This is from Seth Walder.
Yeah.
Seth Walder's ESPN Sports Analytics writer. Kayvon Thibodeau had a 25% pass rush win rate yesterday.
He's coming, man. I'm telling you.
He is. And you know what? So someone replied to Seth. Said, Seth, remind me, what's that mean? Is that good or excellent? Seth said, for an edge rusher, 16% is the average over the season. So yeah. Kayvon Thibodeau was 25%. He said 25% is basically what like a Myles Garrett averages. In a single game, people can go over 50% at the high end, of course, so not a crazy performance, but much higher than Thibodeau's previous games thus far. We said this coming in after his first game. Neither of us were particularly worried. He's coming off the MCL sprain. He's gonna figure it out.
Yes.
And he figured it out this past weekend. He didn't have any sacks, but he got held egregiously two times.
It was
I have no idea how they didn't throw the flag. Yeah. One of which would have been a sack.
By the way.
Yeah, had the batted ball. I don't even know if he technically batted it. He jumped so high it like went off his shoulder or his collarbone or something like that.
This doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but there were times he contained the edge very well in those Aaron Jones runs.
So did Jihad Ward.
Yeah. By the way, Jihad Ward, heart and soul of the Giants defense.
Yeah, it's true.
He is.
And he's Wink's guy.
Yeah.
Like when you're a defensive coordinator and like you have a guy, right, like that, you know, that guy follows you everywhere.
Right.
Good things happen.
I mean, Wink Martindale said it, I think, when he was hired. He's like, as long as I'm a defensive coordinator in the National Football League, Jihad Ward has a job. Talk about that job security right there, right?
Yeah.
Wink is just he's phenomenal what he's doing. I mean,
insane.
At one point they had 44 and 37 playing corner, and I know 44 is Nate McLeod. I mean, just think about that. Like they're starting corners in week 5 in the fourth quarter against Aaron Rodgers were guys that weren't even with the Giants for the majority of training camp.
Yeah.
Like they were picked up as part of the, you know, 53-man cuts. Remember, the Giants like redid their whole quarterback depth at that 53 cut. So remarkable, man. It's a testament to what Brian Daboll is doing. And every week, man, he just continues to show like, yo, he is him. He is the guy.
He is him.
He is the guy.
Mike Kafka, also him.
Yeah. Mike Kafka, future NFL head coach.
I know. It's a good feeling and also a bad feeling when, like, we went through this with Patrick Graham, where you have a coordinator so good and it's like one of your only bright spots. You're like, fuck, like, you know, it's only a matter of time. We don't have to worry about that for Daboll. We don't have to worry about that for Wink. But
you might have to worry about it for Wink.
No, I don't know. At his
Vic Fangio got a job when he
did. Yeah, but I don't know. I think he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to stick around. Like, someone would have to come in with like a big offer for him. But another guy that we should touch on, Darius Slayton, 6 catches on 7 targets, 79 yards.
Huge role on that drive where Daniel Jones sort of
big.
Yeah, it was
big. And I hope we see him more. Like, yeah. There's no point in us not seeing him
right
at this point. With how banged up they are, he's in the last year of his deal. Fuck it. Like, let's just use him. I don't know why they haven't, but it was good to see him ball out to a certain extent this Sunday.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the main things, not necessarily I agree with it, was I think the lack of trust with Slayton's hands was a problem. And I know the counter to that as well, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yeah.
But
I mean, this is ridiculous. Marcus Johnson had a 77% wide receiver snap percentage.
Practice squad player.
Richie James, 54%.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Darius Slayton, I think his skill set will help this offense a lot. And I think we saw that in the Green Bay Packers in the second half against the Packers. Two big catches. I agree with you. I think Slayton should play more. I am just so eager to see Wandale Robinson in this offense. And it goes back to, like, the whole Daniel Bellinger thing. Like, Daniel Bellinger, he's not doing anything that's, like, wow. Like, I know that touchdown was, like, a wow play for a tight end.
But you know what? For a fourth-round rookie, I think that qualifies what he's doing as wow.
Because you know what? I will agree with you.
Yeah. Like, he's no Travis Kelce. We're not saying he's Travis Kelce. We're not saying he's Mark Andrews. But for a fourth-round rookie to come in and be an immediate contributor at a position that the Giants really haven't had security in so long, like, it's incredible.
He had a nice block on Kenny Clark on a Saquon run. It was only, like, a 7 or 8 yard gain. But those are the little things that we talk about, right? Like, you do those things, like, that's the difference between winning and losing in the National Football League. Everyone pays attention to, like, those big plays, but, you know, there are times in a game when you need a guy to block a guy or you need a guy to get that extra yard. Those are the most important elements to winning in a football game. I keep harping on this, man. Like, they finding ways to win games. It's a remarkable thing, and it makes you a believer that this can be more than just a, hey, we're rebuilding, you know, we're going to eat the, you know, bite the bullet, as they say this year.
You know, it's funny because many previous Giants GMs who will go unnamed tried to rebuild and win at the same time.
Right.
However, they tried to rebuild and win at the same time by throwing bad contracts at people and going big game hunting and free agency. Whereas the Giants,
did you hear me
they're
sneeze?
Doing it with – no, I did not hear you sneeze. whereas the Giants are winning while rebuilding, and they're doing it exclusively with coaching.
Yes.
Coaching, homegrown talent, talent that they're picking up off the streets, and that's okay. That's great.
They are elevating players like Julian Love, right?
Yeah.
It was a good player, but, like, he's – like, Wink has put him in a role, and he has elevated his game. Right?
Yeah.
Xavier McKinney, a little bit different because we all knew McKinney was going to take his game to the next level. But, like, you look at, for example, Gary Brightwell, right?
Yeah.
Rookie season, inactive, no role, at best, you know, special teams guy. And I'm not talking kick returning. In his second year, he's getting meaningful snaps in the fourth quarter against the Green Bay Packers and has a rushing touchdown. Throws a key block on a Saquon Barkley touchdown run. Yeah. I mean, those are the type of things that I'm talking about. Like, I'm not talking about guys that have big statistical games. Like, that's not what this is about. I'm talking about guys that you looked at last year that were late round draft picks, had no role, come into the second year, the team puts a lot on their plate, and they do it. Gary Brightwell, I need you to block on this big goal line play. Gary Brightwell, I need you to step in. Saquon is hurt. Like, and not look overwhelmed. Like, that is important, man. Like, those are the type of things, like, I talk about it. Like, that separates winning teams and losing teams. It's not always about, hey, let me look at the stat sheet, you know, or let me look at the PFF grade or whatever. You know, it's those moments in games where you watch a replay of a big play and you're like, shit, that was a nice fucking play by Brightwell. That was a good fucking play by Julian Love. Man, Jalen Smith, we just picked him up off the street last week, and he doesn't look overwhelmed.
No, you know? And now we're about to add Landon Collins to the mix.
Yeah, like, hell, who knows? Baby. Who knows what they can do with Landon Collins? Like, what will they do? Like, Jihad Ward, man, like, this guy's been around the league forever, but he's becoming the heart and soul of our defense. It's like those average Joes that are just, you know, almost
getting coached up to the next level.
Yeah. That and it's a remarkable, remarkable thing. And I think if you're a Giant fan, like I said, you gotta be incredibly, incredibly confident in the future of the Giants.
How could you not be? And then, of course, there's Darnay Holmes, who's double cheeked up on a Sunday morning on the sideline.
I saw that. I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Getting a little Deshaun Watson treatment.
Yeah.
And I just, man, what a visual. That's, woof.
I mean, I get,
Go to the blue tent, right? Yeah. That's what the tent is there for.
That groin area, you know, that sometimes it needs to be massaged up. You know, you're going against Aaron Rodgers. You know, I get it, right? You got to run around a lot.
That's what the tent's there for, Darnay.
Yeah. Children are watching, right?
Children are watching.
Yeah, that was interesting. I always loved I looked at the replies to that guy's tweet, and everyone is like, that's what winning looks like, man. You win, you can get away with stuff like that. Yeah, it was sweet, man. I want to ask you this game in particular, right? When was it, like, Giants haven't won big games like this in a long time. When you think back to it, what you were feeling throughout that game, when was that emotion that high? When was your confidence level that high? When was your, you know, just overall excitement about your team that high last?
First year McAdoo.
That Dallas Cowboys Sunday Night Football game?
Probably.
I would agree with you. That's why I brought that game up.
Yeah.
That was probably the last time. I had a lot of excitement that McAdoo year in that week 17 game against Washington. Like, we had clinched, but I was like, wow, McAdoo playing his guys. I like that. But yeah, I mean, it is very fun. Like, let me tell you a story, Ethan, right? Like, me as a Giant fan, like, I, prior to the Gettleman era, I was very, like, I would legitimately lose sleep over this team. When they would lose, I would be so pissed off, and I would like sit, you know, stay up at night and just be like wanting to, like, I legitimately had anger management problems because of the Giants.
Bro, the team was so bad. We had Twitter spaces going with like Carl Banks and Lawrence Tynes and thousands of people.
Before that, when that shit actually mattered to me, right? And I was so heavily invested in this team where I would legitimately listen to every single radio station that talked about the Giants on Monday. Like, I used to drive, you know, far for work, and, you know, I'd be on the highway for an hour and a half or whatever. And dude, I'd be when I was in college, I'd be listening to WFAN. I would be heavily invested when they win. I'd be pumping my chest out, right? And it all that love sort of deteriorated a little bit the last 4 years, but man, it's back. Dude, I've spent like $300 on Giant merch. Like, I'm so back. And the
See
beauty,
that, John Mara, you shut the fuck up and get out of the way and let people who know what they're doing jobs. And people spend money on,
like,
the team.
That was the thing. Like, the last 4 years when people would come at me and be like, you're a fake fan. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what I've been through. Like, how many sleepless nights I've had over the Giants. You don't know how many times I've gotten into fights with family members that we wouldn't talk for like months because of our argument over football. I'm still dead serious, right? Like, I've been through it as a Giant fan, and like, just to finally like be like, okay, finally, like, they're worth, it's worth being invested in. It just feels so damn good, man.
Yeah.
It just feels so damn good. Like, I don't know how many games they'll win this year, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and put a win total on this. But, like, every week, just the Monday, you know, you have that victory Monday, and then Tuesday, you know, you just sort of take a step back. And then Wednesday, it's like, okay, who's playing? Who's not playing? Thursday, Friday, you know, you get to Sunday. It's like, it feels good.
Yeah. You're looking forward to the games.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Should we do a quick mojo segment, risers and fallers for week 5, and then talk about some of the other games real quick?
Sure.
Okay, so let's focus on some of the Giants here. Stock up. Daniel Jones, $25.92, up $1.11, 4.48%. after this past week's performance.
A lot of people starting to catch on to Daniel Jones' improvements, man. It is. Mm-hmm. I started to see it early on. I saw it in the Dallas game, and it sort of carried over. Yep. Statistically speaking, it's not there, but I think that statistical game is coming.
Yeah. Another one from the other New York team, Breece Hall. $11.61, up 81 cents. I got into so many arguments with my Jets fan friends before the season because I told them, I was like, not only is Breece Hall a stud, but very, very quickly, he is going to get a majority of the snaps and carries at running back. And everyone was, all my Jets fan friends were like, oh, I don't know about that. Like, Michael Carter is pretty good, and Breece Hall's a rookie. I'm like, I don't think you understand how good Breece Hall is. And two, a team does not trade up for a running back unless they have big plans for him. Right. And
it was like the 36th pick, right?
Basically, yeah, they traded up into the second round for him.
Right.
Yeah, so Breece Hall, stock up and well-deserved. Stock down. We briefly texted about this guy yesterday evening. Matthew Stafford.
I think
$97.23. He's down $1.72, 1.74%. Oh, man. Rams are a mess.
I think he's cooked. I understand.
I don't know if he's cooked, but I think McVay is one of the most overrated coaches in the league. Two, that offensive line.
You said overrated coaches?
Overrated.
Wow. Sean McVay.
Yes. I think he's one of the most overrated coaches in the league. On top of that, that offensive line is a mess. Like, I think he's Matt Stafford on the Mojo app is a good short because, part of me believes that they're too talented at other areas to just not remain competitive for the rest of the year. But Stafford is banged up and that offensive line is so bad that I think things really could go south. And if they do, like, at what point do you just say, you know what? Like, let's just make sure that, like, he's getting old. Let's just make sure this dude's healthy and they just, you know, he's on IR or something like that. I don't know. That's a team I wonder about. But again, like, the Dallas Cowboys defense is terrifying. Terrifying. Dan Quinn is doing an incredible job.
Yeah. When we watched Matthew Stafford, and there was sort of stuff about his elbow in the training camp. I just think he looks like a cooked quarterback, man. When you start saying,
I mean, they just won a Super Bowl.
I get it.
He's falling off a hill that quick.
I mean, guys fall off hills quickly, man. Some guys have a slow death. Some guys are just quick. I think Stafford is. He showed signs of being cooked last year, and I know it's difficult for people to comprehend because they did win the Super Bowl last year, but I just don't look at him. I don't look at the Rams right now, and I say to myself, oh, yeah, they're going to turn it around. This team is going to be, you know, they're fine. No, I think San Francisco's defense is a juggernaut.
Yeah, they just got Matt Rhule fired.
Yeah, while I hate everything about Jimmy Garoppolo and just the narrative that he gets, he's a game manager who.
But the narrative he gets is that he's just like a shitty quarterback. And I don't think that that's true. I don't think he is one of the top or the elite levels, but he's a great, probably one of the best game managers in the sport today.
I just hate the fact that people call him a winner.
I mean, he wins. I think his career win percentage is like over 70%.
I mean, if you want to give him credit for winning a game where he throws 8 passes.
I'm not. Listen, I'm not giving him credit. I'm just saying, like, you could do worse.
Of course. Of course you could do worse.
And listen, that's why they – but again, and this is part of the conversation we're going to have about Daniel Jones later in the season, is at what point is the ceiling and you're going to take a shot on upside? That's what they did with Trey Lance, right? They drafted him. They were trying to trade Jimmy G. They're like, listen, like, you're good. Like, the roster's good, but we just need more upside at the quarterback position. And we think Trey Lance gives that to us. Didn't look great, got hurt, and bang, Jimmy's back.
I think Jimmy G's job is to just not make mistakes, and he does that, and I think we shouldn't give him extra credit because he throws a 4-yard pass to Deebo Samuel, who takes it 80 yards for a touchdown.
All right, just keep that same energy when we're having the Daniel Jones conversation later in the year.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, if Daniel Jones First of all, I think Daniel Jones can do more than Jimmy Garoppolo. I truly do believe that.
Well, because he can use his legs.
But at the same time, I do think Daniel Jones is more susceptible to turning the ball over than So, I mean, you're a big upside guy. So when I look at upside, I think Daniel Jones has far more upside than
Jimmy I wouldn't Garoppolo. Say far more. But, yes, I would agree in that there is more upside.
Thank you.
So there we go. Any other games catch your eye this week?
I was just like the 1 o'clock games were a big blur for me just because I was still on a high.
Yeah.
I legitimately was on a high. I want to ask you about Saquon, right? So there's this meter that we did for Daniel Jones.
The tonometer.
Yeah. Saquon. Where are you with him? What's your thought process? Is obviously we talk about this all, you know, through text a lot.
Yeah.
You can't have this conversation on Twitter because Twitter has, there's no nuance on Twitter. Everybody's just, it's just like, you know, you can't have a take that people don't agree with and people be like, okay, that's fine. So I'm going to ask you, what is your opinion of Saquon Barkley? Because he is – he's having an MVP season.
My opinion at this point is twofold. One, get through the season healthy. And two, whatever Joe Shane decides, I will be okay with.
Wow.
That's it. It's one of we both agree that Joe Shane has done such a phenomenal job, both in putting together this coaching staff and filling it with, I mean, replacement level players out of necessity, but replacement level players that are at least coachable and the coaching staff can get the most out of. It's what we spent a majority of the episode harping on. I have to believe that coming from Buffalo, he understands that you can win with lower level running backs and that you need elite talent at the quarterback position for the most part. There's obviously exceptions, right. But for the most part, you want upside. And I mean, look at what Josh Allen did yesterday.
Right.
So knowing those two things and still knowing that Saquon is far different than a Devin Singletary and a Zach Moss, I am just going to, in the Saquon department, enjoy the ride. And I will see what Joe Shane does. That's it. If Joe Shane, no, I'm serious. Listen, if Joe Shane's like, if Saquon's like,
I can't stomach a 5-year contract. I can't do
but
it.
But neither can I. But again, I have to assume that Joe Shane is smarter than to give a running back a massive contract, given what we've seen across the entire NFL. Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, you name the contract. Exclusively aged poorly.
3-year deal, all four. You want to give Saquon a 3-year deal? Let's do it. I think
if it doesn't hinder your ability to go out there and get other pieces and it doesn't hinder your ability to clear out some of the other bad contracts and he's healthy and he's here, I'm for it.
If that's what Joe Shane wants, that's what Joe Shane gets. And he has given me zero reasons to doubt him so far. And if that's the decision, then I will be happy with it.
I'm with you. It's just the simple fact that, you know, like yesterday when Saquon went down with the elbow injury, it looked really bad. Like I thought he legitimately banged up his elbow. I was like, uh-oh, it didn't look good. And they show the replay. I mean, he hit that turf hard. I'm thinking to myself, shit, this could be bad. Luckily, he came back into the game. But it's a tough conversation right now because he's playing at such a high level. I'm sort of with you. I'm enjoying the ride, but I can't stomach a 5-year extension for a running back. 3-year, all four, right? Max dollars, I'm all for 3 years, right?
But again, if you're Saquon and you have had some injuries last year, the year before that.
Well, the league has gotten a little bit smarter with these running back contracts.
Sure, but you're still, if you don't get the money that you want from the Giants, like you're going to try to go out there and get a bag. And I've always been in that camp. Like, if you're a player, like, go get your money. Like, your career is short. If you can find someone to pay you, do it. And that's position agnostic, right? If you're offensive line, if you're running back, I don't care. I don't want it to be my team, but I'll never fault a player for taking a ridiculous contract. Like, I don't fault Kenny Golladay for taking a ridiculous contract. I fault him for not performing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where is your confidence level in terms of the Giants being able to contend with the Cowboys and the Eagles to win the NFC East down the stretch?
Oh, on a scale of like 1 to 10, I'm probably just a 5, right in the middle. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, ever since we did that episode with RJ, I feel like I've been a bit softer on Mike McCarthy. And the job that Dan Quinn has done has just been absolutely incredible. They're going to get Dak back. I mean, they're winning games with Cooper Rush.
Yeah, how the Broncos didn't hire Dan Quinn. And this was the thing about Dan Quinn. Like, he wasn't my number one choice for the Giants. But, like, the people that were talking about, like, how could we interview Dan Quinn? But then would say, Brian Flores, we have to hire Brian Flores. Like,
yeah,
what?
I don't get it. I mean, like, Nathaniel Hackett is just like the prime example for racism in the hiring process in the NFL. Like, I mean, if there's a poster child, it's Nathaniel Hackett. But I agree, man. Dan Quinn's done an absolutely incredible job. And we dunked on the Eagles for hiring Nick Sirianni. He's done an incredible job. And that roster is so deep, so complete, that it's going to be the same exact thing for every single game. It's the Giants have a better coaching staff. They're going to be at a talent disadvantage. Let's see what happens. So I'm smack in the middle right now. If you're asking me 1 to 10, I'm a 5.
Matt LaFleur basically admitted that he was outcoached yesterday in the second half.
Yeah, he said credit to Wink. He basically shoved it up our ass.
Basically, yeah. I'm a little bit more confident than you just because I'm not totally all in on the Eagles and the Cowboys yet.
Me neither. I'm not all in on the Eagles, I would say. The Cowboys, again, that defense just scares me. The Eagles, it just feels like they take their foot off the gas, where there's these teams that they should be beating by 14, and you look in the fourth quarter and it's a one-score game. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So, I just don't know with them.
Like, the Cardinals lost that game yesterday with just stupidity.
Exactly.
Like, I was telling somebody, I'm like, you watch certain teams, and then you watch the Giants, and you say to yourself, holy shit, man, like, there's some really bad coach teams in the NFL. I mean, mental error after mental error after mental error.
Yeah.
Burning timeouts when they don't need to. Horrible clock management. Kyler Murray not understanding. And I mean, it's just, you're happy where the Giants are, and then you compare it to what other teams are, and you're like, damn, other people might have more talent than the Giants, but talent doesn't always win. And we are seeing it firsthand with some of these teams. But I think the Giants can hang with the Cowboys and the Eagles right now.
They already hung with the Cowboys.
Yeah. I'm saying down the stretch, you know, you look at the Giants' schedule, you know, what's left, right? Baltimore's probably, you know, outside of their division games, Baltimore's probably the difficult test remaining. And then obviously you got the Eagles and the Cowboys. But look at this after the Raven game. Jaguars, Seahawks, Texans, Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the Thanksgiving game at the Cowboys. Then you got Commanders, Eagles, Commanders again.
I mean, this was the Giants' difficult stretch to open the season.
Right. These two
after the Ravens.
Three of these four games was Cowboys. Then you had the Bears, but then you had the Packers and the Ravens.
Right.
Like, this is where it was supposed to, like, quote-unquote, unravel for the Giants. But it's just unraveling for them. It's coming together.
The Giants have now won two games. They trailed by 10-plus at the second half. Twice trailed in the fourth quarter.
They had a touchdown in the two-minute drive for the first time since, like, 2020.
Yeah, really, something crazy.
Come a long way.
This team would have zero wins with Joe Judge.
I agree with you.
Zero wins.
I they could not have survived what happened in Chicago.
Nope.
Randy Bullock would have definitely made that field goal.
Exactly.
Oh, no, no, no. He would have missed, but somebody would have jumped off sides or committed a stupid
maybe,
penalty.
Maybe, yeah, something like that.
Carolina, something would have went wrong. You know, like one of those, hey, we're going to win. No, you're not. I'm with you, man. Like, it's I spoke about it a little bit. Like, it's,
yeah.
It is great to be invested in the Giants again as much as I am. It
Same here.
Wonderful feeling.
Yep.
Win, lose, or draw.
Yeah. And I will make a comparison that's going to resonate with very few of our listeners probably. But the Islanders, for so long, like, they had a GM who was just a moron and would just every like, he would hire the wrong coaches. He would draft these guys, you're scratching your head. And they fire him. They bring in the new GM who brings in Barry Trotz, who's Stanley Cup champion, knows what he's doing. And still, with a lot of pieces left over from the previous regime, is able to coach them up, develop them, get the best out of his guys. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of this season with Dable, Kafka, and Wink, where you finally bring in a coaching staff. And yeah, you still have pretty much exclusively guys from the Gettleman era, but they are now finally being coached up to more of their potential than they were with the previous coaches hired by Dave Gettleman and John Mara. So.
I agree. It's a good point. Brought up the Islanders. I want to ask you.
No, we're not doing Mets. We're not doing Mets today.
Hold on. It was a great morning for the Giants. I'm sure it was a great morning for you. I mean, you talked about it. I really want to know, like, I'm not going to lie. At one point, I was watching the Mets this year. Like, I talked about it last week during that stretch where it was, like, no sports but baseball. And I'm like, shit, man. Like, this Mets team, like, they have no weaknesses. Like, they're, you know, I think they're well managed. Buck Showalter is very good manager. This isn't Mickey Callaway, you know. What happened?
Your guess is as good as mine, bro.
Like, I don't even know what they need to do to, you know.
Well,
like, outside of re-sign some players.
But I mean, it sucks. You want the honest perspective? It fucking sucks. Like, you bring in Max Scherzer for game one. Like, that. Yeah. Like, he is here for that reason, and he gets fucking lit up. And then down the stretch, like, it's just a combination of everything. It's a combination of bad luck, right? Like, you fucking finish with over 100 wins, and you have to play in the wild card game. Not only that, the team that won your division, the Braves, also won 101 wins, but because you dropped some bullshit series against some bad teams like the Cubs down the stretch, now all of a sudden this series against the Braves matters. Then you get swept. So I think it's a little bit of bad luck. I think from a front office perspective, you go into the deadline and your big acquisitions are Vogelbach and Darian Ruff, who's fucking awful, and you have some of these promising rookies like Francisco Alvarez, who's absolutely tearing it up in the minors. Why are you waiting so long to bring him up? Like, you got to get him reps earlier in the summer if you actually want him to be up here and contributing with his
Escobar,
big bat,
right?
During crunch time.
Huh? Escobar?
No, Alvarez.
Alvarez, I'm sorry.
The catcher.
Yeah.
Eduardo Escobar had the best September of anyone in baseball. I mean, the guy was just playing out of his mind.
I mean, you looked at the pitching.
And then the whole
lineup
goes cold, man. You get fucking one hit by Joe Musgrove. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, for me, they're pitching. I mean, like you said, you bring in Scherzer for these moments. You bring in, I mean, DeGrom was here. And then, you know, Bassett. I mean, I think Bassett, for to be a rotation's third guy.
He's great.
That's pretty fucking good. And all three of those guys failed you guys.
Well, two of them.
Yeah, but
DeGrom pitched well.
He didn't pitch well in Atlanta.
Not in Atlanta. I'm talking about the Padres.
Yeah. I'm talking in general that last week.
Yeah, fine. Yes.
Like, that wasn't Jacob DeGrom level pitching.
No.
So it's like, what do you do? Like, what happened?
Like, I just told you. It was poor front office work during the deadline. It was bad luck. And it was guys that were brought in here to be studs underperforming.
And I also don't,
when it mattered.
I also don't buy in this was a 1 year thing. Like, I think the Mets are still going to be a good team next year.
I agree, because Steve Cohen is not going to allow them to be bad.
I just don't know what else they have to do to get over the hump.
They need bigger bats.
Well, I'll tell you one bat that's not coming.
I'll tell you one that is. Rhymes with Schmarin Schmudge.
Man, it's tough. as for the Yankees, for me, man, it's the only thing that matters is getting to the ALCS and playing the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm sorry for not getting overly excited about Aaron Judge's home run record. Kudos to him. Awesome achievement. Hope you get $500 million. But, dude, it's all about the Houston Astros for me. Like when I saw RG Ochoa's office and he had the Astros, the fucking Altuve jersey, I wanted to like rip through it my computer screen.
Yep.
But you think the Padres can beat the Dodgers?
No.
You think the Phillies can beat the Braves?
No. But I will
say that's what also has got to hurt the Padres, because
the Padres, who had the deadline that they did, to then basically just go totally limp, and then for pretty much all those guys to perform against the Mets, is a massive kick in the nuts.
It also must suck if you're a Mets fan knowing that the Braves.
So this is a football podcast, and.
that the Phillies and the Braves are about to play in a series that you guys should probably be playing in.
Uh-huh.
But nonetheless, I mean, listen, at least the Giants gave you some happiness.
They did. Yeah. And same, listen, for a lot of Jets fans, the pairing tends to be Jets, Mets, Giants, Yankees. I'm Giants, Mets.
Who cares about the Jets? The Jets don't matter.
No. We mean forget about the Jets. They win that game big. I understand. There's no Tua and Teddy throws one pass. But still, that defense is good. Mike McDaniel's a good coach. Whoever that seventh rounder from Kansas State was that came in, I didn't think he played too poorly. But for the Jets fans to enjoy that big victory and then get their fucking shit kicked in on Monday night, on Sunday night with the Mets, that probably is just a bad night for New York.
Can I tell you something about the Jets? They really don't fucking matter. Giants matter.
Of course. Okay?
The Giants are what matters in New York and in New Jersey. In Connecticut, too, if you want to include them. The Jets don't matter. The only reason that they get talked about as much on the New York radio is because the hosts of these shows are all Jet fans. That's it.
Yeah.
The Jets don't. Like, the Jets won 40-17. Okay, great. Congratulations. But you know, we're talking about the Giants. Like that's what's important. Nobody turns on the radio and gives a shit about the Jets as much as people think. Yeah, they're Jets fans, sure, absolutely, right? But it is a giant town. When the Giants are winning, they're at the forefront. Same thing with baseball, and you know that.
Well, of course.
But it sort of in comparison, like. It's not the same.
But like, why do you think that is?
Dude, the Giants...
It's because one team in each sport has had sustained success for a long period of time. The Jets have been dog shit with the exception of one or two years forever. The Giants have two Super Bowls. The Yankees have been dominant forever. The Mets have been dog shit forever. That's why people care. Yes. If you're a kid growing up during the Yankees' peak era of just winning World Series after World Series and Steinbrenner spending a gazillion dollars... and you don't have parental influence, who are you going to root for? You're going to root for the Yankees. It's because of the sustained success. It's why so many people nationwide are Cowboys fans.
Why do you think, let me ask you a question. Do you think that there are more Giant fans or there are more Jet fans?
Giants fans.
Okay. Do you think that the Jets are talked about way more than they should be by the New York media?
I think you are underestimating how many Jets fans there are and how much they care. It's the same with the Mets. It's the same with the Giants the last few years. We have equally, if not more, to talk about when the team is bad. And when the Jets are bad, it makes for better radio because the hosts who are Jets fans, like you mentioned, even the ones that aren't, it is far more entertaining to shit on them than it is to sing their praises.
I just think that I honestly think they're more Mets fans than Jets fans.
I mean, I don't even know how to quantify that.
When the Jets to me, it's sort of like people say the little brother, big brother thing.
Yeah.
I think it's more of like that stepbrother.
Sure. Well, listen, I don't even know why we're arguing about this. I don't care.
Can I say one more thing and we can wrap it up with this? Dude, I fucking hate these networks that have these referees who they bring on, like Dean Blandino. It's like, dude, I got so mad because it was a that PI on McKinney was so.
I might be like one of the only Giants fans who thought it was a legit call.
Fine, but then the Packers do the same thing. It doesn't get called. And Blandino's like giving this fucking weird explanation. I'm just like, shut up.
Yeah,
man.
Because it's their job.
It is referee propaganda.
Yeah, I agree.
Referee propaganda. And they got that other guy on CBS who does it too. I don't even know his name, but I know when he was a ref, I hated his guts because he was so annoying. I mean, it just pisses me off. Let's go to Dean Blandino. He used to be Mike Pereira too.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, like, why are you going to them? I already know what they're going to say. They're like, I didn't watch the Tom Brady roughing the passer thing with Grady Jarrett.
Oh my God.
I don't know how Jerome Boger is still a referee in the National Football League. Like, to me, the fact that he's still a referee, like, every time he officiates a game, there's at least one controversial call.
Yeah. And he got bullied into that, too. Like, grow a pair. Stand up for yourself.
And his explanation was so bad. It was so bad. Like,
didn't even hear the explanation.
He said something like he threw Tom Brady to the ground excessively, and I'm just like, what?
So ridiculous.
And this, like, Blandino came, like, with the Packers, he came on, and they were like, well, okay, that's PI, and how come that's not PI? And then there's, like, a clear holding, and he's like, well, you're allowed to grab a certain area. It's like, shut up, man. Like, they've called that holding penalty, like, 15 times, and you defended it.
Yeah.
It just pissed me off to the point where I really, like, I got anger problems, man. Like, I'll break my television. You know, if Dean Blandino keeps coming on my TV, I hate Dean Blandino.
Okay. We are out on Dean Blandino.
Very much out. And I don't want to hear about the Jets anymore.
That's it for this week. Giants 4-1. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. You know the drill. Download the Mojo app if you're in Jersey. Buy some stock. Short some stock. Do whatever you feel is right. We'll talk to you guys later this week.
Peace.